Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the Friday, May 29th edition of Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this program, we'll talk with Extension Ag Economist Daryl Good from the University of Illinois. He'll join us for the whole half hour today as we recorded just a bit early. Dave Dickey is out of the office, and I'm away from the office this week. We recorded on Wednesday, so we don't have the numbers for you from the Chicago Board of Trade, but we'll take time to talk to you a little bit about what we produce and how you can access it. Even if you can't hear it on a radio station, you can always visit our website. The address is willag.org. There you can hear our daily ag programming, including the pre-opening and opening market reports and the closing market report, along with this program, Commodity Week, and you can have them all delivered to you directly if you'd like as a podcast. Sign up at willag.org. Speaking of signing up, don't forget to sign up for our free weekend newsletter. It's delivered over the weekend. It's free and easy to subscribe to, and just as easy to unsubscribe to if you'd like to, there at willag.org. It's over on the right-hand side of the page. We've got about 2,700 satisfied customers on that list. We'd sure like to have you join it. So go subscribe at willag.org. That's on our website. If you can't get to a radio to hear the programming that you'd like to from us, and you can't find the website or get to the website, how about doing this? Try this number. On the weekdays, we update a little bit of the marketplace and some analysis just after the open and just after the close at 10:15 and 3:15 daily. On your telephone line, you can dial this number, 217-333-3434. That's 217-333-3434. It's a free telephone call. Well, the telephone call probably will cost you, but it doesn't cost anything to join in. And you can listen to an update of the marketplace if you can't hear us on the radio and you can't get to our website. But nonetheless, there's always a way to find out agricultural information from Illinois Public Media. Our guest in the studio for this edition of Commodity Week is University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Daryl Good. Daryl, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Todd.
We recorded this earlier in the week, not on Friday the 29th, but on a Wednesday prior to that. So if anything has changed greatly, just be aware that we're talking about things that have happened through the Wednesday of this week and not Friday of this week. Daryl, on Tuesday, the numbers came out, and boy, they showed farmers in Illinois really managed to move across the great state and put in corn in the ground. Were you surprised?
No, we thought we would see probably between 60 and 65% of the crop planted as of that report, and they showed 62% of the corn. So we did make awfully good progress. That's the good news. The bad news is it's still very late in the planting season, and we still have a lot of corn to get in the ground.
Is it unusual for producers to be able to put 42% of the crop in the ground in the state of Illinois?
Well, we've seen in the past, we've seen years when we've had a maximum closer to 50%. But again, we didn't have a full week this time. The National Ag Service reported 4.7 days suitable for work. So 5 days planting 40% of the crop, 42%, that's pretty good. It was awfully rapid planting. I think we had a lot of folks really burning the midnight oil trying to get the crop in.
So the next question out of this is, then if you look at Illinois and Indiana, the eastern Corn Belt or a good portion of it, the numbers from the bottom third of those states, the reporting districts in the south, were not very good. They weren't very far along in their corn planting. It was the upper parts of those two states that really did the job. So the question still remains, do they switch acres to soybean at this time? Do you have an answer?
I don't have an answer, but when you look at the southeastern district of Illinois, for example, with only 30% of the corn crop planted as of the 24th of the month, it does raise some questions about prevented planting under the crop insurance program, a switch from corn to soybeans. I've talked to a few folks in that area. It's hard to get a sense of what the general feeling is, but I think people are trying to sort that out right now, talking with their insurance companies, making sure they know what the rules are on prevented planting and so on. But I think we will see some of that happen because it's staying fairly wet in that part of the state, and it looks like chances of more rain as the week draws to a close. We'll see if that unfolds or not. So they've got some tough decisions to make, and you factor in also it looks like the wheat crop is kind of late maturing. The reporting only 19% of the crop with filled heads as of the 24th. Typically you're 40 to 45%. So maybe double cropping is coming into question too on some of that wheat acres if we do have a late harvest there. So a lot of uncertainty in the state of Illinois as we wind down the planting season.
What that really could mean, and maybe you do or don't know the answer to this, is if they do prevented planting on the corn, that means they really have to hold off before they can actually go back in, and they'd probably plant soybean in the south rather than corn, as long as they don't have the anhydrous on, I would think. But does that change very much the validity of the June 30 crop, the acreage report at that point?
Well, what we'll see on June 30th, of course, is still what farmers reported that they planted or intended to plant when the survey was taken. And that survey, of course, is taken well before the end of the month. So I think for the state of Illinois and the southern third of the state, that's going to still reflect a lot of uncertainty on the part of producers. And we may not have the full picture when that report is published.
It will make August and July and September and even all the way up to the final report in January kind of fun and interesting to watch as those acreage numbers change. Okay, so let's get back to the numbers of hand. Producers are looking at a corn crop, I suppose, in Illinois, and maybe let's stick with it as opposed to nationwide, that is late. Have you finished up work on your corn calculations and have some ideas of what you think that lateness might mean?
Well, we do. We do have a model that looks at state average yields explained by trend, planting date, and weather variables. And we have found that the percent of the crop planted late does have a significant impact on state average yields historically. Our definition of late planting has changed somewhat. We've looked at the period 1960 through 2008 as our database. Kind of in the first half of that period, we defined late planting of corn being any corn planted after May 30th. For the last 20 years or so, we define late planting as corn planted after May 20, just because of the trend towards earlier planting. And that earlier planting, I think, being part of what has pushed trend yields higher. So our definition of late has changed. So we're currently defining late as the percentage of the crop planted after May 20. So we're going to have, in the state of Illinois, I think a historically large percent of the crop planted late. The market is, impressed by the planting progress and the fact that we had 62% planted as of May 24th, but we're going to have 60% or more of the crop really planted after May 20, which we define as late. Now, on face value, if you just look at the model, it says in its current iteration, as we've estimated it, each percent of the state crop planted after May 20 has a yield effect of about 3/10 of a bushel. So if we're 40% or 60% late this year, that says everything else equal, We've reduced the state average yield by 18 bushels from what we would have if everything had been normal this year, planting date and weather conditions. So we don't know what summer weather is going to bring at this point. Excellent summer weather certainly can overcome some of the penalties for late planting. Conversely, a poor summer can add to the problems associated with late planting. So it's really too early to be very definitive in your expectations about the state average yield. But the point I like to make is we're starting a little bit behind the eight ball, that we do need to see awfully good summer weather that probably persists through mid-September in order for this crop to reach some kind of normal potential this year.
At $4 corn, that's $72 an acre. Producers need to be aware of that, I suppose, as they market. And we were using numbers that were about half of that earlier in the season, and, of course, late planting, and as we get those numbers coming in and show what the actual percentage are. But that's a lot of money on an acre of corn.
It is, and of course, that's would be an average, and that's the distribution is not going to be equal, of course, across the state, that some of the corn was planted in a timely fashion this year, not much, but some. Some was kind of planted in that intermediate window between May 10th and May 20th, but a large part of it is after May 20th, and there's going to be a segment of it planted extremely late. And based on the agronomic research, the yield penalties really begin to accelerate for corn planted late in the month and certainly into the first part of June.
Now, the question the producers and industry are going to ask, but Darrell, did you try to tease out 96 or 98 on and any drought tolerance or yield kick that might have come from the genetically modified crops that we've been planting in that last decade to 15 years?
The only way we try to tease that out is this. We say once you have a weather model, then you can go back historically and say, what if weather was average every year? What would you have expected the yield to be? And you can calculate the trend yield based on average weather versus the actual trend yield that we saw during that period. And basically what we see is very little difference, which says that we really have not yet seen any yield kick on average above the normal trend increase in corn. I think what people fail to remember is that on average, we've increased the state average yield about 2 bushels per year for the last 50 years. And what we're really talking about is have we accelerated that rate of increase, or has the new technology just maintained that trend? And I think there's some evidence that it's beginning to increase a little bit, but I don't think a significant shift. And when you do statistical tests to say, can we identify a point in time when the trend changed, we don't really find that yet in the 50 years of data. So, yes, we've tried to tease that out, if you will, and we don't find that at this point. We're saying all of this technology is very important in keeping the trend yield going up. Maybe the trend yield is accelerating a little bit, but not significantly at this juncture.
Reminds me that I need to ask Rob Fraley and Monsanto whether they see that in their trend and data information as well. Because usually when you talk to them, they talk about 2010 as a pivotal period. And, of course, 96 is a pivotal period when they started introducing GM crops. But their rhetoric, I'm not sure that their rhetoric wouldn't agree with you, but we'd have to double check.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's a strong disagreement. To some effect, we're looking at different things. In our model, we're looking at state average yields, which encompass a lot of factors, technology, management, weather. It's not a isolated agronomic experiment that says, let's put hybrids side by side under ideal conditions or under the same conditions and see what the yield differences are This is saying how have state average yields performed over the last 50 years. So I think, again, sometimes the question is framed wrong, is not are these new technologies contributing to higher yields, but the question is it contributing to a faster increase in those trend yields? And part of the difference may be in when you started with those in the mid-90s, we certainly didn't adopt those 100%. And the adoption rate has continued to go up over time. So it's partly what is the effect of the technology. The other part is how rapidly have we adopted the technology. And you don't really expect to see an impact there, if there is one, until a majority of the acres are devoted to those new technologies. And we're just now really embarking on that kind of era when the majority of acres are with the new technology.
You're listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. Our guest is Extension Ag Economist Darrell Good. Back in 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. After an extended period of dry weather last week, rain returned to Illinois again this week. A slow-moving upper-level low that affected Florida and the Gulf Coast last week moved northeast into Arkansas, then northeast into Iowa before moving out of the region late this week. Bands of showers and thunderstorms streamed through Illinois, generally moving north to south when they did move. Storms over southwestern Illinois and southeastern Illinois were particularly heavy. One community collaborative rain, hail, and snow network station located in Edwardsville in Madison County measured 8.5 inches of rain between Monday morning and Thursday morning of this week. In southeastern Illinois, more than 5 inches of rain was measured at some locations. In contrast, some locations in central Illinois picked up only 0.5 inch or less during the week. It was more humid this week, of course, with the rain, and the clouds kept temperatures at or a little below normal. A cold front slowly dropping through Illinois will bring almost a daily chance for showers and thunderstorms next week, with rain most likely in northern Illinois. Rainfall amounts and coverage should decrease as you go further south in the state. Temperatures should be near to below normal north and normal to slightly above normal in the south next week. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is Illinois Public Media's Commodity Week, recorded the 29th day of May, 2009, actually a bit earlier than that, but that's the edition of this program. We were recorded Wednesday of the week. Darrell Good, Extension Ag Economist from the University of Illinois, is in studio with us. Let's take up commodity marketing as a whole now and talk about what producers might or want or should be doing. And maybe we can begin with their crop insurance and what kind of base that put under them and how you view it, and then take from there where marketing should go. Start with corn, and then we'll work our way through soybean and wheat.
Well, I've always thought about those folks that have crop revenue insurance basically having a bit of a put option on their insured bushels, and that put option is valued at the insurance price established in the spring of the year. And for corn, that was $4.04 December 2009 futures. And so the kind of the general starting point is we don't get too excited about marketing unless the price offers us something, or the market offers us something better than the insurance price. And currently it does. We're about 50 cents above that crop insurance guarantee. So that puts producers in the territory where there is substantial downside risk on revenue if these prices do not hold through the harvest period. So we're kind of in that territory where we say we have to be making some decisions that at 450, 455, 2009 D's futures, probably a place to think about making some sales. I tend to think that we want to stay pretty small in terms of percentage sold right now for two reasons that are related. One, we have the critical summer growing season ahead of us. And two, beyond harvest, we have another year of factors that are going to influence price beyond harvest. And we're beginning to see some optimism that perhaps our economic conditions will improve as we move into the last quarter of this year and into the first half of 2010. And if we do see some economic recovery, I think that's going to kind of push energy prices higher and put a better base under demand for our commodities. So we're at a starting place. We've got downside risk. Probably should be marketing some of the crop, but in my opinion, not aggressively at this point.
You'd stay 10% or under, 20% or under. And I mean, it's always kind of an interesting 10% or 20% under what you consider normal, but that could be a lot more given the lateness in Illinois than really 10 or 20% of the crop.
Right. You know, with so much of the marketing year in front of us, I certainly personally would think of 20% or less of the crop being sold at these price levels.
All right. Let's take up just a couple of the demand side issues. And the two big ones are ethanol production, the mandate will, and that's a policy issue as much as anything at this point. And then the impact it might have on feedlots. I was talking to an extension ag economist from Kansas State earlier in the week, and I think they're awfully concerned there that if we get into a tight corn situation this year, that they're not making enough money in the cattle industry to really make a go of it, and that it would be a feed versus fuel debate, not a food versus fuel debate. What do you see on that issue and how it might play out?
Well, it's a matter of level, of course, how high corn prices go and how much that would squeeze the margin of livestock producers. The big unanswered question, I think, as we think about that, is if we do see economic improvement that translates into stronger meat demand domestically and worldwide, then I think we could also think in terms of higher livestock prices as we move forward. So it's going to be that combination of feed costs and output price that will influence the decision there. And there's just a lot we don't know about that as we move forward. We do know that last year when we went through extremely high feed prices, that there was a lot of agony, of course, in among livestock producers, but they hung in there pretty well. We did not see massive liquidation of livestock numbers. Certainly, we would think that financial conditions have worsened for them since then, and whether they could weather another period of high prices without some liquidation, I think we would see stronger liquidation this time. So it's going to be important what happens to demand for meat as we move forward.
In May, USDA released its first stab at ending stocks for 2010, or the crop that's going into the ground at this point. 1.1 billion bushels, not a lot.
That's pretty tight as we look forward. And, you know, if in fact the ethanol mandates do stay in place, that's a pretty solid number that USDA was using there, something over 4 billion bushels of corn used for ethanol next year. Hard to see that come down much from that. I think we will, in fact, see a pretty decent rebound in corn exports. And history tells us that that market stays pretty robust, even in the face of high prices, that demand is pretty inelastic there. So if we do have a shortfall in production of corn and prices move higher, it's going to be the livestock sector, again, that I think feels the brunt of that, as ethanol and exports would remain pretty stout.
And despite that short 1.1 billion left in the pantry at the end or at the fall of 2010, they still show a season's average cash price 10 cents below last year at $4.10. Do you think they're too low?
Well, I personally do. That's, of course, the midpoint of their range. And they do show potential for prices to be much higher than that at the upper end of their range. And so I would tend to be, my thinking would be in the upper half of that range rather than the midpoint right now. I'm also not quite as optimistic on the size of the crop as was indicated by USDA in May. I think we could lose a few acres. I think we could lose a little bit off of their projected yield. Would make things a little tighter than the $1.1 billion. And certainly might push us to the upper end of that price range.
And one final question on corn before we turn your attention to soybean. Did the late planting season allow producers to get old crop corn out of their bins? They had an awful lot of time to do that. There was some concern early on that there was an awful lot of corn left in the countryside. Has that dissipated?
Well, I think we've seen a lot of corn move, although in those areas where planting is really delayed, I think they've been more hesitant to sell old crop corn. But we have had an awfully good rally here, 50 cents or more on old crop cash prices, moved above $4 in the spot market. I think that has given producers an opportunity to catch up and get some of that moved out.
If you could keep it in condition, would you hold on to it into the new crop year?
Well, I'd be a little reluctant to hold old crop if I haven't sold much new crop. My approach would be continue to meter out the old crop, probably looking to have that sold by the end of June, and really focus my attention on the new crop and what percent to market there.
Turn your attention to the soybean market. It looks like there could be a really short soybean crop in the making, at least according to some Informa numbers and in the bin at this point, Informa. Down at 77 million left, USDA, of course, well above that. What do you think?
Well, clearly old crop stocks are going to be tight, and we're continuing to see very robust export sales. I was hoping that we would have the April crush report before this airing, but that comes out Thursday of last week. We'll see how fast we're crushing soybeans domestically. But old crop supplies are going to be very, very snug, and certainly the market reflects that with huge inverses in prices. How tight stocks are, I think there's a limit to how low those can go. I do find it curious, though, that there is a tendency for that stocks report, the September 1 stocks report, to show a few more bushels of soybeans than anticipated based on supply and demand numbers going into that report. I just reviewed the USDA's projection of year-ending stocks 2 weeks before the stocks report comes out. And over the last 15 years, about 70% of the time, the actual stocks numbers are larger than the projected inventory. We tend to find a few soybeans in the September report. Clearly not every year, and that's no guarantee we will this year. The smaller the prospects for the 2009 crop are, the more important those year-ending inventories are going to be.
Darrell, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Todd.
That's Extension Ag Economist Darrell Good from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media.